Welcome to the second ever Sand Trap podcast brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is the Tour Championship edition. Of course, we're recording this on Friday at about 1:30, so players are just now getting off in the second round. We'll probably post it Saturday at some time. Joining me, as he did last week, is Jeff Smith. Howdy, Jeff.
Hello, Eric. Good to join with you again and discuss the Tour Championship, some other news we got for everybody today.
A lot of stuff to talk about this week. The PGA Tour announced, Tim Fincham announced, I should say, that the 2007 PGA Tour is going to look a little bit differently. Basically, there'd be a year-long FedEx Cup championship where players would earn points. They'd then be seeded based on their points earnings into a three-event championship series, kind of like a playoff. The top 30 that come out of that go to the Tour Championship. There are seven or eight events after the Tour Championship, which is moved up till September. Those events are called the Quest for the Card. So this PGA Tour season doesn't really shorten at all, but the Tour Championship, the official season for the exempt players, gets moved up. Jeff, what do you think of this?
Well, you know, you've got a pretty positive response from a lot of the players. You know, at the press conference, everybody was kind of excited about it. They put out some promo stuff, and you have various players, Tiger included, saying, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm liking the shorter season." You know, I think it's going to give, I think it's going to add some energy to the end of the PGA Tour season, which is good. Obviously, you get past the last major of the year. Yeah, and, you know, things tail off. You got a bunch of guys fighting and scraping to get in for next year. But I think it's a good thing. Of course, there's some things that need to get worked out, you know, to help us understand.
Right, just, and I did find it odd that at the press conference, Tim Fincham was talking about, he brought the players on stage, Adam Scott and a few others, and basically asked them to comment on the schedule, but they haven't seen the schedule. They haven't seen which events are moving around, how the point system is going to earn out. So, like, oh, it's a great idea, whatever it turns out to be. So, yep. You know, I mean, some people are mostly still in the dark. Tim Fincham admits they don't really know what it's going to be. They don't know how they're going to get the points arranged and set up. Is a major twice as many points? Are they going to use strength of field like the official World Golf Ranking points or what?
Yeah, well, I think there has to be a mechanism in place to reward wins. What happens if you have a flat fall and you just can't play the game, you know? I think, you know, you have to reward people who've played all of the first, you know, part of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it could get to the point. I mean, he said, Tim Fincham said in his thing, if you're the number one seed going in, you're still the number one seed and you kind of have a base set of points, but you're brought down much closer to the rest of the field. So it's almost like you start over, but not quite. Mm-hmm. So you could see a situation where, say, Tiger Woods, not that he's won the miss many cuts or anything, but suppose he comes in ranked number one, drops down, you know, because everyone kind of squishes down and gets closer to each other when you enter that championship series. What if he, you know, played two events and missed the cut and finished tied for 47th in one of them? Yeah, is he going to make the Tour Championship, even if he wins six times previously in the year?
Right. You know, well, knows? I think players already kind of understand this system. Some majors, everybody wants to finish right. One home. And, you know, they already understand that they only have one shot. So this just kind of elevates, you know, the stakes.
Yeah, we'll I just hope that they have to get it right the first time. They can't have a stupid 2007 year where Vijay Singh wins three times and doesn't get into the Tour Championship or something like that. I mean, they can't have that happen. They also hopefully can't have something like Phil Mickelson opting out of the Tour Championship as he did this week. Yes. Tim Fincham in that same press conference was asked what he thinks of Mickelson's personal and private reasons to stay home. And he said that he's very disappointed. I had heard that because Phil would be required to play in the Tuesday Pro-Am, he wouldn't be able to get back from San Diego and trick-or-treating with his kids in time. So that was pretty much the reason he opted out. What do you think of Mickelson's decision not to show up, and what do you think of the tour requirement that you have to play in the Pro-Am?
Well, first of all, I think Mickelson's decision, I mean, it's understandable he wants to be with his family, but I really feel like it was a bit of a weak a weak call on his part. I mean, you know, there are 30 players who qualify for that, and, you know, barring injury or personal tragedy, I think if you qualify, you should play. It's the All-Star game for the PGA Tour, and it, right. You know, it just kind of shows me that, you know, this guy doesn't really care. He doesn't. If there's any place you want to give back, it's at this event. And, you know, there's other guys who wanted to be there, but Phil didn't take his spot, so I think he kind of blew it there.
Right. Calling it the All-Star game is a good way to look at it. And the Pro-Am, you know, if the top players could, my feeling on that is if the top players could elect out of that, they would pretty much every week. A few of them might do it because they really enjoy the interaction, or maybe because they meet some business people. I mean, I know that Phil has, I think he met the Ford chairman or something at a Pro-Am. You know, they make business connections at these things too, because these aren't, you know, everyday schlubs. These are, you know, wealthy people forking over 20 grand to play with them. I think it's one of those, you know, ways to give back without doing a whole lot. I mean, it's a practice round in a way,
yeah.
You know, and I think it's just a little selfish to think that, you know, he shouldn't be obligated to play in those. I'm in favor of maybe two passes per year or something, because, you know, if Tiger plays 19, 20 events and he wants to opt out of two Pro-Ams, fine. You know, if he gives maybe a two-week notice or something ahead of time so nobody books him, you know, and hopes to get him or something like that. But for maybe a personal private reason or something like that, whatever it could be. So I'm in favor of that, but playing him, you know, that's the rule. You know, he makes $6 million this year playing on the PGA Tour. You know, there's a couple downsides. Mm-hmm. You know, live with him, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that's what, you know, Phil should have done. Was jump in there and do it. You know, it's a shame that he couldn't get around his family thing. But hey,
take him trick or treating in Atlanta. The neighborhood right around that course is great, isn't it?
Yeah, there's plenty of homes around there, dude. Yeah,
they're all, you know, low income and all that. But you know, they built it up. It looks nice, right?
You bet Candy's the same there as it is, you know, on the West Coast. So
I bet Jeff Ogilvy would have hoped that the PGA Tour had a rule where if someone withdraws, he gets in. He
was the 31st ranked player. That's exactly what I was thinking. And yet, you know, that same thing would happen if they opt out of the Pro-Am. You know, they would. There's some players you'd find opt out of the, you know, the Tour Championship. Don't want that, so they've got to have some mechanism to guys in there.
Well, I'm saying, Phil Mickelson knew he wasn't going to go to the Tour Championship 2 weeks ago. Right. There's plenty of time to let Jeff Ogilvy know that he could be the 30th guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. I mean, right on the bubble, and you missed it because, well, he missed it.
But, he missed it. Yeah, right. I mean. But, I don't know, I think given the choice. I mean, we had alternates for All-Stars in baseball and Little League and stuff like that. State golf tournaments, they had alternates.
Plenty of stuff that the tour could do to tighten things down like that, yep. For instance.
Right.
I mean, the onus is on Mickelson on this one. But
that's right. So how about, you know, people are making hay about the top 125, but actually they got another event going on. They got the Southern Farm Bureau, which was delayed a month or a month and a half. It's going on next week. So yeah, the top 125 still has, they still got a chance to get in there. I'm looking at the list now, and I see, let me see here.
Oh, we've got a few notables. I noticed, you know, I mean, Todd Hamilton's in because of his British Open, you know, but he's 133rd on the list.
And Lauren Roberts is 126.
Yeah.
He's been playing he's been splitting his time between the Champions Tour, and here he won the last major, I think, up there, the Geldwin or something. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's 50. He'll be fine on there, but he said he'd like to have options. He's 126. Yeah. Hunter Mahan doesn't need it because he won last year. Would be nice to, you know, get in there anyway. Ben Curtis, Kirk Triplett. You know.
Yeah, what about that Nick Price? 124th. Yep. He's on the bubble.
Yeah, and he's not playing. That's what I hear. Yeah. So, you know, he can use one of the all-time money list exemptions or whatever, but kind of sucks to have to use those. Duffy Waldorf's down there at 150. Lee Jansen's down there at 154. Sean McKeel at 161. Not that he's had a great year. Kevin Stadler, that DQ cost him. He's at 168. I don't think he's even playing in the Southern Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So,
yeah.
Chris Riley, look at that, 181. I guess he's too tired this year. That Ryder Cup tired him right out. He's had a bad year. He's still tired. And he needs to get a nap. Brad Faxon wins the Payne Stewart Award.
Mr. Good Faxon. Award to get out. Yeah, he's a deserving guy, and he says he said that he felt like winning the award felt like a major. And,
yep.
So I thought that was pretty neat. You know, he's a solid guy. He got a win this year, which is pretty neat.
That's right. Faxon runs the CBS Charity Classic with Billy Andrade up there in New England. not too far from where Titleist is. No surprise that Brad Faxon is a Titleist player, too. But right up there in Massachusetts area, Rhode Island, I think. He and Billy Andre are from there. It's a two-day event in Rhode Island that has raised more than $6 million for children's charities in New York, or in New England. So congratulations to Brad Faxon on winning the Payne Stewart Award for this year. And Payne Stewart is still missed.
He sure is. Now, let's just move to a word from our sponsor.
This week at GolfGods.com, you'll find great deals in our demo and returns area. The GolfGods.com demo and returns area features rock-bottom pricing on barely used equipment. Maybe you're looking for a tailor-made R7 driver or the new Callaway FT3 driver. Well, GolfGods.com has them, and they are priced to move fast. GolfGods.com also has an extensive selection of new equipment and a great assortment of holiday gifts. So check out GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of TheSandTrap.com.
And we're back. This is Eric Barzeski on the SandTrap.com podcast. I'm here with Fidgety, Mr. Jeff Smith.
A little nervous, too much coffee. I live in the Northwest, so I got to drink a lot of that stuff.
Right. So a little site recap, some stories we've run in the past week. Dave Koster, in the numbers game, he looks at the top 30 players that got into the Tour Championship and checks out their stats for the year. The first one is driving accuracy. Basically, it's almost a flat line. Players who were down in the rankings had slightly less driving accuracy as a general rule, but the dots are all over the place. The same is true for driving distance. So very little difference between the long drivers and the accurate drivers within the top 30.
Not much impact, in other words.
Right, and people like Tiger Woods help to skew that stat just a little bit because he wins $10 million and he drives it far. But then you get someone like Fred Funk or whatever that help balance it back out. The things Dave has noticed, and again, his column is a statistics column, the things that he have noticed really matter are how well you putt and how well you hit greens. Tiger is something like 11th in greens in regulation, and he's always up there in putting, especially when he has to make a putt. Sergio Garcia hits 72% of the greens or something like that. He looks at, doesn't putt so well, but he's hitting greens. So if you drive in the rough and you hit a green, you still get a birdie putt. But at the same time, you're more likely to hit the green from the fairway. Even Tiger Woods' stats are something like 15% more likely to hit the green from the fairway than the rough. So that's the equalizer. But it's those players that can get on the green and make the putts that do well. Jeff, what do you think of this? There's this whole debate over distance, but Dave has shown many, many times over and over again that it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, the thing of it is, you know, it shows the weekend player that, you know, greens and regulation and putting your short game, getting up and down, those things are vital not only to scoring well for the week. Certainly, you know, the stats show that these PGA guys benefit from being on the green in regulation and putting well. That's it.
Yep.
Short game matters. All right. Josh Cremita did our Hitting the Links this week, volume 33. He had a few things that I noticed. I really enjoyed watching an old woman kill a seagull off the
Yeah. I sent that link to 50 people.
Call me sadistic.
She tees it up and she hits it with her 50-mile-an-hour swing speed. And bonk.
I mean, the thing keeled over and started twitching. I thought, my goodness, that's impressive. And how does somebody catch cool stuff like that on video? That is something else.
I know.
And not only that, Josh included a link to the most expensive golf course, you know, ever built. Apparently, the CEO of Reebok has spent 7 years and $130 million turning his little slab of New Jersey into one of the most fabulous courses in the area. Well, you know, his hope
is... I think Jimmy Hoffa is buried somewhere on that course.
It is, and he's hoping to find him. That could be a nice plaque. You know, and he hopes it'll eventually be, U.S. Open or PGA Championship. Now, we'll see about that.
Yeah, so, Donald Trump wanted that, too, for those LPGA people, and they're not even going back next year for a regular LPGA event, so money doesn't buy a U.S. Open.
Yeah, you know, Trump builds kind of circus kind of courses, though. They're a little outlandish.
But he likes waterfalls.
That's, you know, just a random waterfalls on a golf course.
That's right. So. And when he's out and he wants a good lie in the rough, he could just lay his hairpiece down.
What is with that guy's hair?
I don't know if that's a fly or a lie or what.
I don't know what.
You got to kind of play it back in your stance and punch down through the hairpiece.
Does no one care? I mean, does no one close to him? Will they not say to Donald, my friend?
It's about branding.
Lose that's the his hair. Brand.
That's his brand.
It is. It is. It's a poof.
Trashy wow. Women that divorce him in 3 years and bad hair. It's a 10 handicap. I've seen his golf swing. It's not bad.
Yeah, he's a fair golfer.
I don't know if he'd play to the 10 very often, but oof. If you were playing against Donald Trump, would you let him win?
Would I let him win?
I think I'd beat him.
Yeah, I mean, I'd try to beat him. I mean, unless...
Especially if we were betting.
Yeah, exactly.
Cody writes in his year in review in his Thrash Talk article. Let's see. Player of the year? Take a guess.
Yeah, Tiger Woods.
That's rookie of the year. Really not a close race here. Sean O'Hare kind of runs away with it. Ryan Moore, had he been able to play more, I guess he'd be second. I can't really think of anybody else. Jason Gore, too. I think, honestly, he deserves a good bit of attention.
Yeah.
I'd put him in second, just a tiny smidge behind Sean O'Hare, really, because he won just as many tournaments in, I don't know how many starts he got, what, 4 or 5? Not like 30 or 25 like Sean O'Hare did, so.
Yeah, he had Jason Gore had an outstanding season, of course, to see him.
So then would you put Sean O'Hare ahead of Jason Gore, just because he did so much more in a compressed time period, and those three wins on the Nationwide Tour?
Would I put Sean O'Hare ahead of Jason Gore? Yes, I would, because he was there the whole year long. I think he's got the edge on him. Jason Gore, what he did is, you know, every bit as extraordinary, coming out of the Nationwide Tour, 3 wins in a row, Battlefield promotion, and then Shazam, he's winning on the PGA Tour. But that doesn't all qualify him for the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year.
Best tournament and best finish. I voted on the Masters, you know, just the chip. That was, you know, as soon as you saw it, you knew it was a moment that people are going to talk about for 50 years. So, mm-hmm.
Well, I thought it was a defining moment for Chris DeMarco as well. I enjoyed that battle. So,
but apparently his definition is losing. So, two in a row.
He was there down the stretch. I thought he asserted himself, but of course he wasn't able to close.
That's Cody's favorite moment was the President's Cup, watching Fred Couples put in his birdie putt. But then Chris DeMarco following it up with his birdie putt as well. So he's got the guts. He's just, I mean, this guy hasn't won on tour in 3-4 years. 2002, yeah. I think.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not even a regular win. Not a regular event. So he's a great player. We obviously see that. He elevates his game for the majors, but hasn't won since 2002 or something. So surprises. What do you think?
VJ was a bit of a surprise to me, I suppose. I mean, he had an outstanding season, so you can't really take away from what he's done. Right. His putter obviously kind of came unstuck.
Well, Cody lists VJ Singh as one of his disappointments, and I guess it would have just said VJ Singh's putter.
Now it's time for our listener email for the week. James from Escondido, California writes in and says, if the ball and the club don't account for increases in distance only, what other factors are there? Why are today's pros hitting the ball 20 yards further than 20 years ago? Eric?
Yeah, I think this is a question based on an article I wrote a week or two ago about, you know, people are concerned with people hitting the ball far. Some people are blaming just the ball. Some people are blaming drivers, you know, 460cc titanium monsters. Mm-hmm. The main point I tried to make in that article is until you consider all the factors, you're really not talking about anything. 20 years ago, you could probably grab one of the pinnacles from back then and off the driver, the ball would probably go as far as today's balls. It just doesn't have the spin around the greens and stuff that pros want. But that was a distance ball 20 years ago. Low spin. It would launch pretty high if you had the same technique you have nowadays. I think also that if you took a wood driver, a persimmon driver, if you somehow lengthened that 2 inches and somehow magically reduced the weight but kept the same playing characteristics, uh-huh. The average pro would probably pick up 15 yards just from those two changes. 2 inches longer and a lighter club head.
Right.
So, you know, 20 yards over 20 years isn't that much, because 20 years ago it was steel shafts, wood heads. Mm-hmm. The ball is almost irrelevant. The ball they used back then, I mean, the Titleist Balata didn't go very far, but they wanted the control and the spin. There are a lot of other factors out there. There's, you know, whether or not the fairways roll further. I know at the British Open they certainly rolled. There are a lot of things out there that contribute, it's important to look at all those. I mean, drivers are longer now. Every inch you add to a driver or any club accounts for about 2 to 3 miles per hour in swing speed, which accounts for 3 to 5 miles per hour in ball speed, which accounts for slightly more than that in yardage. And that's why people swing their drivers 110, but their five irons, you know, 90 miles an hour, 85 or something. Drivers are 2 inches longer now than they were 20 years ago. That's
right.
A component of distance. There's a lot of stuff out there to consider and as far as why people are hitting the ball further. I mean, 20 years ago, Craig Sadler was in shape. Nowadays, not so much.
Right.
So there are a lot of factors out there. I'm not saying that it's not at all the ball or the driver or whatever, or technology in general, but I want everyone to consider all the factors before they place blame or anything.
It's not just one thing like the ball or the club.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Eric. We're going to move along now to our ad because even people who work for the Sand Trap have to eat.
This week at GolfGods.com, you'll find great deals in our demo and returns area. The GolfGods.com demo and returns area features rock-bottom pricing on barely used equipment. Maybe you're looking for a TaylorMade R7 driver or the new Callaway FT3 driver. Well, GolfGods.com has them, and they are priced to move fast. GolfGods.com also has an extensive selection of new equipment and a great assortment of holiday gifts. So check out GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of thesandtrap.com.
Welcome back. Now it's time for our Beating Balls segment. I'm going to change the name of that because it doesn't really sound very good.
No, it sounds kind of painful. Watson came back to beat Haas on the last hole of the Champions Tour. It was a really exciting finish. Is the Champions Tour all that is cracked up to be, or is it simply a way for the previous greats to keep making money?
I'll tell you, Carl Peterson won the PGA Tour event that day. Tom Watson, Jay Haas had a 6-shot lead. Dana Quigley was in it. There were a bunch of people with, you know, pretty big names. Tom Watson's won 5 British Opens and countless other majors. The Champions Tour is all that because I like to see people with big names winning tournaments. I couldn't care less about Carl Peterson, really. But Tom Watson, Jay Haas, big names. It's nice to see the big names of 10 years ago winning tournaments again.
And I want them to keep playing, too. I like seeing those guys play, just like you.
All right. Michael Bamberger. Obviously, we know him from the Michelle Wee incident, our first professional start and the bad drop and all that. Just happened to release a book recently. Granted, it's something he'd been working on for a while. But what do you think? Coincidence or conspiracy?
Very, very curious circumstances in my book. I thought that his involvement in that tournament was questionable. He should have brought up the incident immediately instead of waiting until the next day.
A publicity stunt?
Was it a publicity stunt? I am very skeptical. I don't know. I thought it was very curious, made me raise my eyebrows when I heard that he had released a book on the heels of this big incident.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because, you know, the book isn't about Michelle Wee or anything. It's one he'd been working on, so maybe it got bumped up a couple weeks. But
yeah, Colin Montgomery just won a record 8th order of merit. Is Mrs. Doubtfire a Hall of Fame player?
No. He hasn't won on U.S. soil. He hasn't won a major. He's been beaten up on the weaker European Tour. The better players play in the PGA Tour. Earlier this year, the Nationwide Tour, someone on that tour said that they were just as good as the European Tour or better. And I happen to agree that it's pretty close. The European Tour is not the PGA Tour, and it's not the top golfers in the world. Until Colin Montgomery wins on U.S. soil or wins a major, no, he's not a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah, the best example is most international players want to play on the PGA Tour.
Even Michael Campbell came over and won a U.S. Open. So.
Yep.
Speaking of someone who's happened to win a major, but probably won't make the Hall of Fame if he keeps up his current pace. What the heck has happened to Mike Weir?
He's struggling around the greens. Greens in regulation is 164th on the PGA Tour. His putting average is 165th. He's only made one eagle. His scoring average is 106th on the PGA Tour. He's a short player to start with. The guy needs to get his act together around the greens. Casey Martin announced that he was basically calling it quits. This many years later, where do you stand on his court case?
I'm taking the unpopular position, I'm sure, because it's politically incorrect to speak out against someone who's handicapped, but someone that could dribble the ball well and shoot but was in a wheelchair wouldn't petition the NBA to play. I think walking is an integral part of the game. I think that it's an athletic endeavor. You walk something like 6 miles playing the average golf course. The way the length on the PGA Tour is, these guys walk 7 or 8. Fatigue is a factor, particularly when they have to play a couple holes from the previous round because of a rain delay or something. You know, these guys are playing couple times played 36 holes in a day. I think fatigue is a factor, and I think that's part of it. I think he could have found something else to do with his time. Enjoy golf, play golf, but don't necessarily play professional golf because the rule was that you had to walk.
I'm going to take the politically correct route. I thought it was cool that, you know, that he had the opportunity to play. He's calling it quits. I don't know if I care.
All right. When will these players win a major? Just give me the major and the year real quick here. Ryan Moore.
Ryan Moore is going to win the Masters in 2007. He's got some toughening up to do.
Sean O'Hare.
2008 British Open.
How about Chris DeMarco?
Ooh, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Win a tournament?
That's my question.
You don't think he will, huh? Really?
Oh, win a major? He's going to win a major, and he better get it done next year. That's what I'm saying. It's got to happen in 2006.
How about the top of everyone's best player yet to win a major, Sergio Garcia?
Sergio Garcia has got to get his act together around the greens. He's one of the best ball strikers in the league. Greens and regulation stats are just outstanding, but he's got to learn to putt. And he's going to win.
Putt for show, putt for dough.
That's it, man. I'm going to say he's going to win the 2008 U.S. Open. What's the over and under on Michelle Wee's LPGA win total, Eric?
She could win anywhere from 10 to 100 LPGA events. If I had to pick a number, I'm going to go with 40. Sounds a bit low, but Annika Sorensen has 67 or so right now. She's also been injury-free. She's also not quite had the competition. Kari Webb and them are giving her a run for a little bit, but you know, the past 5 years, who has it really been but Annika? People like Annika and people that are following her up are starting to come onto the LPGA Tour. I think Morgan Pressel will have more tournament wins than Michelle Wee. I think she has more desire and more drive.
All right, what about on the PGA Tour? How many will she win there?
You're joking, right? Zero. She may have a good round or two. She may make a cut, but she's not got the game to win against the guys. Comeback player of the year. What do you got?
Comeback. Well, I'm gonna go with my profile's choice. Jason Bowen is my comeback player of the year.
That's a surprising choice.
It is a surprising choice, and man, maybe an unfair choice to some other players. But he's been playing for a long time, struggled on mini tours and on the Canadian Tour. Last year, he missed his PGA Tour card, and then now he's 34th in the world.
My vote probably goes towards Mark Calcavecchia or me. But I guess if we're going to stick to the PGA Tour, Mark Calcavecchia.
All right. Hey, now tell me, Eric, who's going to win the big break for?
Who cares? Does anybody watch?
I don't know. They do.
I mean, this show is boring because, and I think they split them into two teams to try to get a little competition. But what happens is Team USA loses, Team Europe is exempt, and then we get to watch three players or six players or whatever, half the people involved for half the show. So we're seeing less golf. There's less personality. There's nobody to hate like Dawn or blonde bimbo girl from the Big Break 3. There's nobody really cares.
Danielle,
right. Blonde bimbo girl, so whatever.
That's it.
Nobody cares enough about the players to root for anybody. You know, I'm just kind of watching going, oh, he sucked. Oh, he shanked it. I mean, and they're shanking. There's been two shanks already. I mean, it's just, I don't know. These people don't realize that they're not tour quality players.
Yeah,
and
that's
awful. It's just bad. Who will win? Not the viewers. Bring the ladies back. At least then we can look at legs.
There you go, man.
Here, people, we've alluded this to this now, but Jeff, you got to play last week. I was mad about it because it was cold and rainy here. You go out, you make a hole-in-one. You're first. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Where does that
hole-in-one rank in your life's achievements?
Oh, it's up there. It's not, obviously getting married and having kids and graduating from college and all that kind of stuff's a big thing. But
Jeff, your wife and kids aren't listening. Where does it rank in your life's achievements?
It's right up there. I'd say it's in the top 10.
All right, well, settle something else for us. Skill or luck?
A hole in one is like getting hit by lightning. You don't see it coming, and it's a shock. So skill, yeah.
Right, skill. Okay. Well, you want to talk about that a little bit more, right? So go ahead.
Yeah, I do. I've got my card, and I, you know, of course, I kept the ball, and I wrote the date on it, October 28th, 2005, hole in one. I've got my golf ball here, and my card.
Who witnessed this? You played by yourself, right?
I played by myself. There was a twosome up ahead of me, and I hit the shot. I wasn't sure if it went in. I'm walking up to the green, and there's two fellas walking past the green right next to me as I walk up. There's the ball mark 10 feet ahead is the hole. There's nothing there. And I said, guys, look, check this out. And congratulations. So, you know, while they didn't see it happen, they were there as I walked up. So I got, you know, witnesses in a way. Does that work?
Yeah, and how much was the tab there at the end of the day?
You know what? Because nobody was with me, I couldn't buy. I felt...
Whoever's in the grill room, Jeff.
I felt cheated. And perhaps I need to go back and make things right there, Eric.
You could just buy me something.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right. You owe me a drink.
I got you next time, dude.
All right, you owe me a drink.
That's it. All right. Can do. So, anyway, I was saying we got a listener email last week, and one of the things I said was, you know, you need to relax and have a good time out there. Well, I started this round. I started on the back nine. There's a par five. I made an eight. There's a par. The next par five. I'm sorry to say this. I made a 10. Then the next par four, three lost balls. I made a 10. By that time, man, I'm just ready to just break some clubs or something. And then I said, you know, what's wrong? I stopped myself. I relaxed a little. What are you doing? I moved the ball back in my stance a little bit. I played the next hole, and I bogeyed it. So that's all good. I'm relaxing. I'm starting to strike the ball better. Stepped up to the par three and just hit it in the hole. So I took my own advice. I mean, the main thing here, I read this article last week.
We'll link to it in our show notes.
From Golf Digest magazine, how to bounce back. A few things kind of come to mind. They say stick with the plan. Don't try to do something different. I find out very often if I'm struggling, I'll try to kind of conjure a swing. And call a mental timeout, they say. Channel your emotions. Choose to be confident. That's the biggest one. If you're struggling, hang with it. That's a big, loud message to me. You might be struggling, but there might be a hole-in-one around the corner.
Especially if you pay two guys a heady to lie, right?
That's all good, man. It's all money. So.
And then you skip out on the drinks. I know you've only been playing a year, but come on.
Dude, I'm going to catch some flack for this.
I'm emailing your wife. I'm going to tell her she has a dishonorable husband. Thanks for joining us this week. We're going to wrap it up. Tune in next week. Again, thanks for listening. This is the SandTrap.com podcast. Bye-bye.
Good day.